Alex Pompez, who became an exceptional judge of baseball talent and a very good fellow to know if you were trying to stock your Major League ball club with Hispanic players, began his career in baseball in 1916 as the owner of the Cuban Stars, later the New York Cubans. He was also a very successful businessman and one of the few businesses open to black entrepreneurs early in the 20th century. He was a numbers king in Harlem. In that capacity, he got muscled around by notorious gangster Dutch Schultz. No wonder Adrian Burgos Jr. felt the life of Alex Pompez would make a good book. Adrian Burgos joins me now from NPR's New York Bureau. Welcome back to Only a Game.
Thank you, Bill. It's great to be back.
Shortly after 1910, Alex Pompez became a powerful force in Harlem as a so-called numbers king. Explain what that meant.
A numbers king was one of those group of numbers bankers that ran the illegal lottery. Today's version is called the Pick Three. And he was a banker. And these bankers employed collectors, and he was at the very top of that. And not only was he at the top of his own numbers bank, he was also one of the biggest numbers banks in Harlem. In 1932, his numbers bank gross revenue was between $5 and $7 million, according to his own testimony. Tom Dewey, special prosecutor later in New York City, said he thought it was more like $10 to $15 million that it was grossing.
I guess it wouldn't be accurate to say that all the owners of Negro League teams built their fortunes the same way.
But most did, particularly in the Negro National League. The numbers provided ready capital, and the way numbers kings were viewed was totally dependent upon, did they recycle that money into the community, or did they just line their pockets with that money? And guys like Gus Greenlee, Abe Manley, Rufus Sunny Man Jackson, and Alex Pompez were all viewed as good community men, as race men, because they recirculated that money within Pittsburgh, New York, and Newark. And that's what colored people's perception of Alex Pompez. The New York papers would call him a square dealer. He was a square shooter. He was a stand-up guy because he would constantly remain tied to his New York Harlem roots.
And when you say recirculated, in this case, it means these guys were lending money to entrepreneurs and businessmen in places like Harlem, guys who could never have gotten loans from establishment banks.
Exactly. You know, helping start up restaurants, local concerns, you know, cigar stores, candy stores. It just so happened at times that these places doubled as a center for numbers collecting. But, you know, that's so much the better for keeping the industry going.
Once famed gangster Dutch Schultz decided that he wanted to take over the numbers business in Harlem, I guess it was a good thing Mr. Pompez was able to go full time into the baseball business.
Right, because, and again, this is an indication of how good he was at evaluating talent, that he was able to survive in just a baseball context after Schultz came in, took over the Harlem numbers racket. Then he's killed, and Pompez was forced to flee to Mexico, arrested ultimately. And we had this great scene where after testifying at the Hines trial of 1938, Pompez says, I'm going strictly into baseball. There's a lot more profit in the numbers, but there's much more troubles. And as I write in the book, you know, Pompez and reemerging him and recasting himself as strictly a baseball guy, he didn't have to worry about his competitors trying to bump him off if he was too successful. And yeah, baseball was a lot safer.
In their best years, the New York Cubans beat the most established Negro League teams. Luis Lefty Tiant, father of Major League standout Louis Tiant Jr., led the Stars to a Negro League World Championship back in 1947. Was that success the result of Pompez's ability as a scout?
I believe so. That 1947 club that featured a young Orestes Minoso before he became many when in the major leagues, and other talented players like Silvio Garcia, almost retired Horacio Rabbit Martinez, and Lorenzo Chiquitin Cabrera, and Claro Duane, very big names in Latino baseball. He had to convince them to come north to play for his team, And that team in 1947 would have the really fascinating misfortune of winning the Negro League World Series in the year that Jackie Robinson, just across town, was integrating the major leagues. So that really was indicative of what Alex Pompez and others had to deal with in 1947 as Negro League entrepreneurs.
The Negro Leagues were essentially done in by integration, the integration of the major leagues in 47, although not quite immediately. How did Alex Pompez make the transition from team owner to scout for Horace Stoneham, who owned the New York Giants?
In 1944, Stoneham and Pompez agreed for the New York Cubans to rent out the Polo Grounds when the Giants were away. After Robinson was signed, Stoneham and his scouting director, the Hall of Famer, Carl Hubble, decided, why don't we tap him on the shoulder and get some advice? And what Pompez did was advise him that in 47, they began to sign guys like Monty Irving. Hank Thompson would be signed in the winter of 47 into 48. And these guys would be the initial black players. Well, let me give you an indication of how important Alex Pompez is to this process. The Birmingham Black Barons made one trip to New York City in 1948 to play at the Polo Grounds. Alex Pompez talked to his friends at the New York Amsterdam News and the New York Age and convinced them not to mention the star center fielder for the Black Barons, Willie Mays, in their coverage and not to print any box scores. And that inside touch within that world of black baseball is what the Giants tapped into when they hired Alex Pompez to be their man.
You quote Felipe Alou, the former Major League player and manager, as saying of Pompez that, quote, anywhere and everywhere they played baseball, Panama, Colombia, Venezuela, Puerto Rico, Cuba, Pompez was a legend. Was Mr. Alou exaggerating?
I don't think so. He would bring players out of Panama in 1921 into the Negro Leagues. He would sign the first Dominican that played in the Negro Leagues in 1926. In 1928, he would sign the first Puerto Rican to play in the Negro Leagues. And then when he became a Giant scout, he once again would traverse these circuits and bring in talent. And with his former shortstop, Horacio Martinez, they would open the Dominican talent pipeline into the Major Leagues by signing the players that we know so well, Marichal, the Alou brothers, Manny Mota, and others out of the DR. And they were the ones that later on guys like Pedro Martinez himself would look up to as heroes. You know, it's Marichal. You know, that's the guy they look towards. And Alou is clearly one of the elder statesmen of the game, and not just the DR, but in all of Latin America for the stances he took throughout his career and after.
The final chapter of Cuban Star suggests that the story of Alex Pompez can be instructive to all of us living in the U.S. today, no matter what our backgrounds. What should we learn from the narrative of his life?
One of the aspects is his is an immigrant tale. He's the son of immigrants, but it shows what the first generation of U.S.-born Latinos have to navigate in this world. For him, it was about being black and Latino and being bilingual and seeing those not as a deficit, but to build on those, to make pathways into opportunity. So you have a guy who had a multicultural background who used it to improve the national game because he signed guys like Willie McCovey and Willie Kirkland, as well as guys like Cepeda and Alou and others. And in a certain sense, Alex Pompez was a 21st century figure. He was kind of ahead of his time.
Adrian Burgos Jr. is the author of Cuban Star, How One Negro League Owner Changed the Face of Baseball. It's published by Hill & Wang. The author joined me from NPR's New York Bureau. Adrian, thank you very much for speaking with me.
It's been wonderful to be back here.
It's 22 and a half minutes before the hour.
Support for Only a Game comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where the program is produced, Harvard University, whose summer school has courses for high school, college, and adults to earn academic credit and experience campus life, summer.harvard.edu, and Oliver Wyman, an international strategy consulting firm. With 3,000 professionals worldwide, Oliver Wyman serves global 1,000 companies. OliverWyman.com. This is NPR.
If you don't want to run into any naked people, stop right here. So read the signs around the nude hiking trail recently established in Wuppertal, Germany, or beautiful Wuppertal, as the mayor of the town likes to call her domain. How beautiful the trail in Wuppertal is on a particular day perhaps depends on who's hiking, but the concept of the nude trail also appeals to some number of litigants in Switzerland, where the right to wander, tromp, or skip through the Edelweiss in the altogether will soon be taken up by the Supreme Court, all the members of which will likely be wearing clothes, even if it's a really nice day and they decide to convene outdoors.